One thing that I know for sure, that I can count on as night following day, is that when I conclude this sermon, half of you will leave. I know this. And therefore, you understand I know the corollary, which is, as long as I talk, you will stay. Rabbis don't have very many powers left these days, but one power we do have is the thing can't be over until we shut up. So at a wedding, I will sometimes say to the couple, the only thing that stands between you and a life of wedded bliss is how long the rabbi talks. Because they can't break the glass until I stop. The same thing is true at other life cycle functions. The one time that the Jews are at the mercy of the rabbi is now. And I thought about that reality and about this room. This room is going to look very different in X number of minutes. And then again after Yizkor, when the room will clear out. And I thought about the importance of rooms in the Jewish tradition because really, we are to some extent a room-centered tradition. It's true, some Jews pray outside. But in Eastern Europe, if you went to a Jewish school, what was it called? A cheder. And what does cheder mean? A room. The holiest spot in the history of the Jewish tradition was called the Kadosh Kadoshim, the Holy of Holies. And you know what it was? It was a room. It was four walls and a ceiling. What we do in rooms and with rooms, that's part of what defines us. And I thought about that in relationship to the Yizkor service. I've told the story before, but it fits so beautifully this year that I am reminded again of my friend Danny Gordas, who when he went to Israel and was praying in a synagogue on Yom Kippur, he remembered that his grandfather, who was a renowned conservative rabbi, used to get very upset when people would leave for Yizkor. Because he would say, it's a superstition, there's no reason to leave, it's not bad luck to be there for Yizkor, people should stay, but invariably people left. And so one year, Danny was in the synagogue, and everybody got up and started to leave for Yizkor, and he got upset in his grandfather's name. And the man standing next to him said, don't be upset. He said, I was here when this synagogue was first founded. And let me tell you, when this synagogue was first founded, nobody left for Yizkor. Everybody had lost someone. And they hadn't lost someone in general. They had lost someone in the Shoah. The Holocaust defined and continues to define our people. Every time we hear an anti-Semitic slur, immediately our minds make that leap back. And we think of all the empty rooms. I have a book in my office that is called Synagogues Without Jews. It's a series of pictures of beautiful, empty rooms. Because there are no Jews there anymore. I remember when I was 12 years old, I was at Camp Ramah in the Poconos, and they decided to show us Night and Fog. And in that documentary, I saw bulldozers pushing dead bodies into pits. I went into the movie believing in God, and I came out of the movie not believing in God. because it was so devastating and so comprehensive and the loss so total. How I found my way back here is the subject of another sermon and another story, but that same image has had that same effect on many Jews. We think about the Shoah, but we don't think about it all the time because it is incomprehensible. We can maybe understand one story, but even then, the loss of one human being is, of course, the loss of an entire world, and this happened again and again and again. This sanctuary holds about 2,000 people. You would have to kill everyone in it 3,000 times. And look around you, because the people who died at the Holocaust, they were you, they were me. Men, women, children, girls, boys, to whom terrible things were done. When we talk about survivors, we're talking about people who lost everything and still managed somehow to come out. But the scar, the wound on our people is unimaginable and enduring. The state of Israel is not recompense for the Holocaust. We should have had an Israel anyway. We were meant to have an Israel anyway, and Zionism started long before Nazism. And besides, no matter what you do, you can't make up for a life. It's not possible. And no matter how much we plumb the horrors of the Shoah, fresh horrors keep reminding us that we literally cannot imagine what it is. The other day I read a story that I had never read before about a town where a group of SS officers took a 7 or 8 year old Jewish boy and dressed him up in an SS uniform and gave him a gun and had him go through the town and shoot the Jews. The imagination of sadism has no bounds. Parents who watched their children die before them. Children who watched their parents humiliated and killed. We don't talk about this all the time for obvious reasons. And in fact, when I thought about it and I looked back, and as much as I have notes or archives, I don't think I've ever given a Yizkor sermon just about the Shoah. Because I remember growing up and thinking, the Shoah shouldn't dominate our Judaism. That's not a motivation for kids. We have to teach them what is beautiful and what is wonderful about Judaism, not only our tragedies. And I still believe that. But this is overwhelming. And we cannot let too much time pass without remembering everything that we lost. How does the city sit solitary that was full of people? That's what we read in Echa after Jerusalem was destroyed, and here was a destruction that was greater than the destruction of Jerusalem. We're here. So for many of us, although not for all, it is literally impossible to imagine what it is to come home one day and discover that not only is your life ended as you knew it, but so is everyone you knew. Imagine thinking back to your childhood only to know that everybody you remember probably died, and horribly. Everyone, even the incidental people, not just your teachers and your friends, but the person you used to buy candy from and the person you used to walk in your neighborhood, all of them swept up and all of them gone. Your memory of childhood as you consult it is one wound. And this is Yizkor. We know how painful rooms are sometimes for people who lived a normal life. If you've cleaned out the room of a parent or a relative who's died, and it's filled with memories, or you walk into the room to take a far less painful but still painful event of a child who has moved out and gone on in the world, and you look at all those memories and you realize how bittersweet memory is, imagine if your memory ends only in catastrophe. It's impossible to imagine. I have heard stories from people sitting in this room that I do not believe, but I know are true. Stories of survivors who will tell you, if you push them, some of the horror, and you recognize that you cannot possibly understand. And part of you revolts against every time that something in the news is compared to the Holocaust, because there is nothing. Nothing that compares to the systematic, not just destruction of a people, but humiliation, torture, gassing, shooting, hanging, slaughter of the good and the bad, the bully and the blessed, the child and the parent, everyone. I'm here to tell you just one fragment of one story about a young man in his late teens, approaching 20, who one Saturday was walking home after the Nazis had come to his town in Lodz. And he saw them in the hospital of the city. And they had gone into the maternity wards. And they took the babies and they smashed them against the walls of the hospital and threw them out the windows into trucks to cart them away. He saw this. It's not a description. It's not a movie. Imagine coming home one day and seeing this and knowing, because by then everyone knew, that this was the beginning. So what do you do? People had all sorts of reactions. Some tried to run. Some tried to hide who they were. This man went home and he said to his mother, he told her what he had seen. And in his last conversation with her, because he never saw her again, he said, "If I survive, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that Judaism survives too." Now, why does someone do that? I think that's because at that moment, someone gets a glimpse of something real that we talk about, but none of us, or most of us, have not seen, which is the genuine possibility that Judaism could end. Sitting here in this sanctuary, among friends, as much as we worry about this alternative or that alternative, the reality that this really could all end, it doesn't seem real, but walk by that hospital and it was real. And so, like many survivors, many of whom built this community, as you know, he decided to do that. So when Max Webb, for that's who it was, said that he wanted to name the senior rabbinic position at Sinai Temple so that I would be the Max Webb rabbi. I thought, this is part of a mother's promise. Because what the Nazis wanted to destroy was not only Jews. You know, they planned the Museum of a Dead People. They wanted to destroy Judaism. It's why more than one Nazi guard, as the Jews were marched to the gas chamber, would say to them, "Who will live and who will die?" As if to say, "Your tradition is dead, and now we decide." But when you support rabbis, you do something that has nothing to do with the rabbi and everything to do with the room. What I said to you at the beginning was exactly right. That is, the one power left to the rabbi, and really it was the only power a rabbi ever had, was for a little while to keep Jews in the room. In a world in which there are so many rooms that are now empty of Jews, all over the world today, there are rabbis who are talking to rooms full of Jews. And to the extent that there is victory, that is victory. Now I know, as I said before, I know that in just a few moments, when I conclude, you're going to leave. And then after Yisker, more of you, and a few of you will stay for the study session. But here's what I want to say. Come back for Ne'ilah. Let's finish this Yom Kippur with a room full of Jews. No more empty rooms. Not because it will save one soul that perished, but because it is the only way the Jewish people have ever learned to combat the horror that threatened to destroy us, which is to come back again and again and again. To refuse, whether in Israel or anywhere else in the world, to leave the room, to insist that we have a place. I felt enormously proud that the senior rabbi position would have that title, because it's for all the survivors. There are people alive in the world today, still alive, who remember when all of this was almost over. When every Jew in the world was a target, and a war held all of our fates in the balance. Thank God, right now, that's no longer true. Thank God, right now, this room is full. So let it be full. Teach your children and your grandchildren that as long as they want to be here, we, the Jewish people, we will have room. Shabbat Shalom.